This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio, again, back here in Amelia Island in Florida with the Institute 2025 Summit. Theme is Stand Out. And my next guest is absolutely outstanding. We are theinstitute.com. Thanks to Cecil and Kent for having us out here. I've learned a lot, met a lot of nice, neat new friends. And thank you so much to our sponsors. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, for over 30 years, NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Hey, welcome back. Let me tell you about my next guest. In fact, there's so much to talk about that I have to actually read it from his mini bio here. The best-selling author of nearly 50 sports books. Damn, I've always wanted to write just one. He's a peak performance business speaker and proud member of the Speakers Hall of Fame, which is no easy task. And you proved that to us this morning. He's keynoted conferences all over seven continents. He's been featured on CNN, CBS Mornings, MSNBC, ESPN, and Fox News, as well as The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and USA Today. His mission for us today in the conference, as we heard his keynote, is to get us all thinking differently about how we can raise our game to the next level. Sports was, man, everything you talked about with sports, you opened up with Tom Brady. And so since I'm from Buffalo, I wasn't comfortable with that.
I'm from Minnesota. I wasn't comfortable with that.
I just found it. Here I am figuring out how the damn man beat us forever.
Right.
I know. We may have been one in 10 years. I just don't quite remember that. But Ross Bernstein, you nailed it. You were telling stories up there and you covered 16 different, if you will, strategies or concepts for us. And I want to talk about a few of them. But the theme that we've been hearing from all of our speakers, and as I was spending time at the lunches and at the breakfasts, this whole storytelling thing is big. I mean, that's what you did. You got up on stage and all you did in all 16 key strategies was tell us a story. Mm-hmm. And the audience was glued. Why is storytelling so important?
Well, thank you, Carm. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here. Storytelling is just the best way to communicate, right? We've been doing it forever. When a great storyteller tells a story and they talk about their family, you think about your family. When they talk about their job, you think about your job. We learned that from Walt Disney, right? Books, movies, and our brains are wired for storytelling. So I think it's a muscle. You can get better at it. You can work at it. Yeah, I remember one time I was speaking at a conference with Jay Leno, and I was visiting with him in the green room, and I was, in awe of the celebrity. But of course, he was the nicest guy in the world, just as you'd imagine, asked me all about me. And I was fascinated to learn, and this is back in the 90s before cell phones and social media and video, that every Saturday night when he was at the peak of The Tonight Show, when he was making, a guy probably made $100 million, that he would, every Saturday night at midnight, he would do like a stand-up improv set at the Hermosa Beach Comedy and Magic Club for the drunks. And it, before anyone could record it, but he would basically practice his stories.
Yeah, he was honing.
Hone it. And he said, if I could tighten up a story by two or three words, just do people laugh differently? And I thought, I was amazed that here's a guy who's had such success, yet was so particular and wanted to practice and make it right. And that really stuck with me about that. That's what makes the great ones great, is that even those little things, they can work on them.
Jay Leno was a real guy, man. I mean, he was the real deal. I loved Jay Leno, and I continue to like him today. Of course, I'm old enough to remember Johnny Carson.
Me too.
And those were big shoes to fill, weren't they? In this industry, we're small business people, and we're trying to teach them through coaching and what I do on the podcast and the networking groups that exist, how to become a more sophisticated business person. And everything you talked about today helped us become more sophisticated. One of them was team chemistry. And I think we struggle with that a lot, since most of our CEOs are business owners today. Never went to a leadership class. They came up from the wrench world into being a CEO. Chemistry? Let me see. I remember going to a class in school and we had something foaming on the counter. That's not it today.
Chemistry is the biggest thing in sports and that they're aware of, and they work on it constantly, and we don't think about it in business. Teams start out the season and they go to training camp in a small town, middle of nowhere, no spouses, no kids, because they need to figure out chemistry.
Who they are.
Yeah. Do these guys get along? Do they not get along? Who are the team cancers? Who are the bad apples? I did a book called Raising Stanley, right? And interviewed hundreds of professional hockey players who'd hoisted the Stanley Cup. And I wanted to know why, looking for the trends and the patterns and the commonalities. And I got to know Scotty Bowman, who wrote the foreword for the book. And it was fascinating getting to know this guy. He's the winningest coach in the history of the National Hockey League. He's got 14 Stanley Cup rings. He even named his freaking kid Stanley, which is pretty cool. Now, Stanley's won 3 Stanley Cups. So this kid was destined for greatness. But I remember Scotty talking about the importance of chemistry and about not having the best players, but the right players. And when he was at the Detroit Red Wings, it was a masterclass. He was able to put the right people together. And by the way, the 14 Cups wasn't a dynasty team like the Yankees. It was, he had a repeatable process. He was able to recreate it in St. Louis and Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Montreal, Detroit, and he would put the right people together. So in Detroit, he had one line of all Russians. There's actually a movie about him called The Russian Five. And it's interesting because 3 of them were there originally and they were really good. They scored a ton of goals, but they were wild. They drank a lot of vodka. So he knew that the only way to get the right chemistry was to get 2 older veterans that these kids looked up to that would listen to him. So he literally went to Moscow and like with brown paper sacks of cash, allegedly, and car keys to his fancy car, convinced them to defect, to come to America, play hockey, get an apartment. And once those old guys got there, these kids shaped up and it was an incredible line. And then they had another line of all Swedes. And see, Scotty understood that when you put friends together, high school teammates, college teammates, they had fun. They'd fight for each other. They'd enjoy assists more than goals because that guy's buying beer. So he was able to do more with less. He didn't have the best players. He had the right players and the right chemistry. And it's cliche, the long to hire, quick to fire, but it's so true. If there's a team cancer, if there's a bad apple, if someone's not, maybe not necessarily performing, but if they're bad for team chemistry, they got to go. And that's why I talk about a lot of guys who are like clubhouse guys, the veterans.
Yeah.
They're the ones that keep the peace. They're the ones that let the managers know, hey, these guys don't get along. There's going to be conflict. You got to trade one of them. You got to do something. If the chemistry is off, the team will never win. And you can win in sports. You don't have to have the best players. If as long as you get the right chemistry and players love each other, whenever teams win Super Bowls, you watch this, whenever this, after the Super Bowl, when they interview people, they're going to say, we were like family. Yeah. We all got along.
Right.
Everyone wanted to go out to dinner together. And teams that lose, there's drama, conflict, egos. So it's a fascinating thing.
How do we build chemistry? Obviously, we need to be creative like Scotty was and think, if you will, outside of the box. And we have to bring our intuition to the world we live in. We have to observe. We have to listen. We have to see if we've got high fives going on, if we have people supporting each other inside of our circus.
You can also incentivize your people to bring in their friends. I have companies that will do that.
Yeah,
right? They'll give you a signing bonus if you bring in a friend.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to get kids into the trades these days, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I worked for a cool company one time. I speak at about 130 conferences per year, and they're all different industries. I do a lot of work in the automotive space, a lot of different touch points, but I do every industry. And I had a gig one time at this precision manufacturing conference. And before I came in, I was doing some homework, and I went and met with this company, and they make these little like springs and stamps, like little tiny, but they have to be within like a millionth of a micron of an inch, because they go into like airplane doors and cell phones. Mm-hmm. So they got to be perfect. And if there's any problem, that, you know, lawsuits, it takes a year to apprentice on this machine just to make these tiny parts. And it's monotonous and boring. It's not sexy. And this company was going to die because they had all these old people that were aging out. They're all retiring and they had no pipeline of young talent. So they had to take some drastic measures. So they went out and they acquired this local community college, which had been disrupted by online university. So they had closed and they were part of this other college, but there was an empty building. So they bought it and they invested. They put some of those machines in there and they kind of cleaned them up, made them look good. But then they added in some video games, a bar, a little kitchen. And then they got very strategic about recruiting who they thought might be good at operating these machines. So they went for kids who were wanting to get into the trades. Farm kids, motorheads, military kids, whoever they thought, and they'd bring them in. And then they brought back some of their older retirees and they trained him, and it was this really fun environment. They had music playing. It was very different than the traditional setting. And a couple of things happened. Number one, the kids had fun. And as soon as they liked it, they said, hey, we'll pay off your student loan at this trade school for what we've created just for this machines. And we'll incentivize you if you bring in some of your buddies. So they did. And it created this pipeline. So three things happened. Number one, they had a whole pipeline of new talent, of kids who wanted to be there. Number two, they created a new culture. The chemistry, the culture changed. And the old people wanted to come back to work. They said, hey, now it's fun. You got this new energy. There's music. It's like people are going out after work and people liked each other. And it wasn't just a job. It was more of a career and it was fun. And number three, the college that they had partnered with had 100% job placement. So it was a win-win-win. And that college was promoting them and encouraging. And that's the thing. Like, you've got to be able to find talent these days and acquire. There's two ways to get talent. You draft it, you know, like in sports, you develop it, or you acquire it, which is making a trade, and you got to buy someone. If you need a new CFO or shop manager, it's going to cost you a lot. But then there's this gray area of finding those sort of emerging leaders, those diamonds in the rough, or you recruit kids who you think would come in and you make it fun. So I'm always fascinated. I don't tell people how to do it. I'm not the hero of my story. I just share other stories about people and say, here's, maybe this would work for you.
You're challenging our think. I love what you just said. And I wrote down the words work family. And then I wrote down reinvent the family. It doesn't mean that we can't have the most spotless employee kitchen, a clean refrigerator where all the food's been there for over a week or two. I mean, just as good of a coffee selection as we have for our customers out front. And that's kind of been a discussion trend lately, is to work on the inside as much as we work on the outside. Since this whole thing was sports themed, and I've always compared what we do to the medical field to a certain degree because of the knowledge that people have to have and the specialties they have to have, which is really kind of slamming us as an industry. But there were so many sports analogies. And when I heard you talk about playbook, you know, it's on the Apple iPad and they've got a playbook. I started to think about the playbook for our people is the career path we outline for them and the tools that we provide them and the, if you will, the functionality of solving problems for our people. Talk to me about the power of the playbook in sports.
Yeah, it's interesting. In that module, I was talking about Tom Brady and all the specialized coaching that he would receive and spent extra money for. You know, now they're using, kids are using data, predictive analytics, artificial intelligence, algorithms, and they measure everything. There's a saying in sports, the film don't lie. So they record everything, and there's no arguing that way, because a coach walks out in the huddle and says, they don't ask what happened. I don't want your interpretation of what you think happened. They just show the video because the film don't lie. So they record everything and then they discuss it and then they hold them accountable. And it's pretty fascinating, but each player has a custom playbook. So they load it up with data and film. And if they're recovering from a knee injury, they want to know certain KPIs and metrics. How's it feeling? How many miles did you run today? How about yesterday, last week, last month, last year? What's your core body temperature? What's your blood pressure? I mean, what do you measure? You can't get better if you don't measure it. So they measure everything and they want to know, is it a positive or negative measurement? Like, is it good, bad? They don't want to get better in a big way. They want to get better in a little way. Every day they want to get a little bit better. And they know there's going to be setbacks, injuries. There's going to be confidence issues. So they want to get better and they want to help build their confidence and get better. So video and data is the sort of the key to that. But then having, instead of just a playbook that is, you know, tired and old and outdated the second it comes out, they have an iPad that they can upload with new information of things you want to watch. And then they can hold them accountable. Did you watch these videos? It'll tell them. Did you watch it? Yes. How many times? Did you watch it in slow motion? What did you look for? What did you learn? And then they practice over and over and they hold them accountable. And if you don't practice and do these things, you're on the bench or we're going to trade you or cut you. So we don't do that in business. We don't practice making phone calls. We don't teach our young people how to work with the customer. We just say, nope, I fixed it. Right. Well, you got to train them. It's like storytelling. You got to practice. Like, sometimes my daughter, who's a wonderful storyteller, will tell this long. I'm like, honey, land the plane. Get to the point. Like make it, like, if it's funny, that. Like, get to it, right?
I love that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no one right way to do it. And that's kind of what I do. I celebrate lots of different ways and I just do it through the lens of sports. It's kind of been my passion, but it applies to business, it applies to life. And, you know, the people in your industry do an amazing service. They help to create the American dream. They help to make sure that our vehicles run well and that we're safe and that we can get to where we need to go to run our country and businesses. And what they do is profound. And, you know, I love studying the top producers, like what makes the great ones great and why, right? Like Tom Brady, like love him or hate him. I mean, the guy's the winningest ever. And it's not just getting to the top, it's staying at the top. It's that dynasty mentality. How do you continually deliver extraordinary customer experience? How do you continually hire and recruit and train young Gen Z talent that wants to work with you and stay with you? How do you continually come up with new innovative ways to solve problems. This is what great companies do.
Yeah.
Last week, I worked for Kraft Heinz for a huge sales group of people that sell ketchup and condiments and Philadelphia cheese. And I'm like thinking like, man, what, you know, these guys sell ketchup packets, but no, they make the fun, right? Like French fries aren't fun without Heinz ketchup.
Bingo.
And I'm like, it was just awesome. And they have so much fun. And some they sell to mom and pop stores where they just got the old bottles of ketchup. And they even changed that. Because remember in the old days, they would have a bottle of ketchup that was like a quarter empty and it was all kind of slimy in there. And you're like, ugh, I don't want that. So they created these plastic bottles that are the identical color red. I don't know if you've seen like a Heinz bottle. It won all these awards for packaging. It was really remarkable. And they can't fill them up. They make it so the cap, if you take the cap off, it breaks. It can't use it. It's one use. But it always looks full. And
it has a flip top.
Yeah, it does, but you can't refill it. Like okay. Once you unscrew it, it's toast.
It's yeah.
But you know, some sell packets, some sell those flip tops and they put them on the tables, you know, and they got those little baskets on the table. Some sell industrial, like McDonald's, where they buy them, where you pump it out at a pumping station. That's the thing. I learn every day about new products, new companies, new, you know, and I'm, so for one day I'm an expert in ketchup, right? So it's fascinating.
Are you an NAPA Auto Care Center who is ready to take your shop to the next level? Then the Premier Tier NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program is exactly what you need. Gold Certified Auto Care Centers provide customers with a consistent experience no matter where they are in the U.S. Now, this means they are more likely to return and support your shop or find your Gold Certified Auto Care Center while on the road. Gold Certified members can maximize technology, increase their local marketing opportunities, and have a fully trained team that keeps up with the latest trends. Simply put, the Gold Certified NAPA Auto Care Program powered by your local brand will set you apart. A true partnership is a two-way street. Shops must meet specific criteria to be eligible for the many benefits of gold. Now, NAPA Auto Care rewards its most committed partners, their gold certified members, with free premium shop referrals on the NAPA online locator, annual marketing dollars, an enhanced warranty, training opportunities, program rebates, and so much more. Are you ready to get started? Contact your local NAPA sales representative to discuss your eligibility and apply today. More than 16% of light-duty vehicles on the road are EV and hybrid. Is your shop ready to safely and properly service them? Get your shop trained and equipped to service hybrid and EV vehicles with NAPA AutoTech's innovative EV-ready Level 1 high-voltage awareness and maintenance training. Hey, take your auto care center to the next level, the gold level, with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. This program is for the best of the best who can provide a consistent consumer experience and earn the trust of returning and new customers. Talk to your NAPA sales representative about how you can become a gold certified shop. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NAPAtrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NAPAtrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NAPAtrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NAPAtrax, that's NAPAtrax.com. Ross, I'm an expert in ketchup. Can I tell my story?
Carm the Condiment King, I love it.
This Can I tell great. You my story?
Let's hear it.
I come back from Apex, get off the plane, meet Ann. We go out with our friends because every Friday night we go out with friends. We're sitting. There's like eight of us at a table and the food comes out and there were French fries on my plate. So I, right in front of me, I reach for the ketchup bottle. It's one of those exact bottles you just described. And I brought it near me and I flipped the top. It exploded.
Oh, no.
I'm wearing a white shirt, coat, the whole, it's all over me.
Oh, no.
It's all over my friend to the left. It's over my friend to the right. Oh, and we're all scurrying for more napkins, water, spray bottle, the whole thing. I am glass catch. It exploded. And what I want to know, and I've never really found out, maybe you can tell me, what happens? I mean, did it ferment? Why was that thing explosive?
I better call Kraft. Maybe it was Hunt's. Maybe it wasn't their bottle. Let's say it was a competitor.
No, right? And I don't mean to bring up a brand. I just mean to bring up what happens to ketchup bottles that explode.
I have no idea. We've all been there, right?
Thank you. I've never told that story on my podcast. I think this is the first time. Okay, thank you. You land the ketchup story for me. You mentioned the word practice just a few minutes ago. And in our industry, this continuing education that we have to be involved with, CEO leadership training, service advisor training, and all the technology that goes on in the bays, we go out and educate. But if we don't come back and practice what we learned, we lose it.
Yeah. And you know, this business, it's such a mom and pop business at its core. Like everyone who gets in.
Maybe they start as a mom and pop, but today we're much more sophisticated.
But they know the business, right? It's not like you just bought it and you're hiring people to run. And people in this business are passionate about the business. Anyone our age certainly knows how to change a tire, change oil, work on the carburetor. Like
those There's no such thing anymore.
No such thing, but the old G's, they all know that stuff.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
And it's a different world. But I think that's what's cool about this industry, though, is that people are passionate about it. It's like I do a lot of work in the hospitality industry. I work with some of the biggest hotel and restaurant brands. And anytime you interview a restaurant manager who's been around for a little while, they all started out as a barback, a waiter, a waitress, a dishwasher, and they work their way up, assistant manager, swing manager. By the time they get to a manager or a franchisee, they know every touch point of the business. And that's the thing that's cool about your industry is that people know, like the CEOs, these companies, the owners, the shop owners, they know. They've been there. They've been in those bays, right? That's a really cool, unique, differentiating factor about this industry is that you have that connection. I work in a lot of industries where people have no idea what goes on in those other areas, right? And I think that's unique. But I think that also creates problems that you sort of take things for granted. You go, well, we've always done things that way. Or, well, I know what's going on because I've been there, done that. But the reality is that young people today and those kids that are in those bays, they think differently. They have mental health issues. They care about different things and about work and culture and life after work. And so now you can't just be a boss. You've got to be a psychologist, a mom, a dad, a shoulder to cry on. Yeah. Kids want to be promoted. You got to give micro promotions. You got to help them succeed or they're not going to stick around. And if you want to create loyalty, like I told a story today, I worked for some restaurants that have 150 to 200% turnover every year. I mean, as bad as your listeners think they have it, imagine that. That takes into account, you might have a typical fast food QSR restaurant, 20 employees, five are lifers. Five have been there 10, 20 years. That's a lifetime in fast food, right? But then you take the other end of the spectrum, they've been there 5 minutes or they said, you know what, on the way over to the interview, the other guys, Arby's, offered me a nickel an hour more, so I'm going to go there. So you're constant. Someone shows up day one, you train them, they quit. So if they quit, that means you're coming in on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So to create loyalty, to create that culture, that environment is such a key factor. And that's where being a great leader, being a good storyteller, listening, that's the secret sauce.
You said something, I think almost near the end of your speech today about a day, a week, and a year. And I think you said, you know how quickly a day and a week goes by? No, you know,
I'll give you, it's an old proverb. It's not from me, but it's an old, days and weeks and months drag on,
right?
But years fly by.
Yeah.
And that's, if you've got kids, then that connects with you.
Yeah, I know exactly. And so I want to jump into the word focus right now, because sometimes we just don't give our all to understanding what we want to do. I know you talk about goals and purpose and why. It's been big at this conference. It's big, I think, for all of us in life to do this. But focus, I think, is something that's pulling us away from really accomplishing our goals and our whys. How do we get some of the distractions away from us, Ross? How?
It's a different world. Social media, cell phones, I mean, they're just a part of that world now. So you're going to have
to learn to live with it.
Whenever I had a 2-hour speech today with a room full of people that were tired, hungover, many of them. And basically, I look at them, they look at me, and a lot of times I'll see someone basically with their phone and like this, and they're looking at me like, okay, monkey boy, dance. Because if you suck, if I'm not interested, I'll be here for the next 2 hours. I don't need you. I need to be better than Instagram and Facebook.
Whoa.
If I can capture the audience, and that's a superpower, it's a weird one, because I don't take a breath for 2 hours and I'm up there. It's a pretty weird thing. But I'll tell you what, as I looked around the audience, say several hundred people, there were a couple people that were sound asleep. And I'll tell you what, I think that's awesome, because that's their time. My gift to them is time. And you never know what someone's going through in their life. I had a guy one time that was sleeping during my program, and afterwards he came up to talk to me. He said, I want you to know, I lost my mom this morning and I just wanted to listen and then I wanted to zone out. I just didn't want to be at her. Hey, I was really tired because my wife has cancer. And I'm like, man, you don't know what people are going through.
Everyone has a story.
Everyone has a story. And if I could give them the gift of just giving them a little time to catch up and get recharged. I mean, that's the thing at this conference, we're not on Zoom. We're not just like zooming in to be because we had to or because it's like they chose to invest to come here. They're not working in the business. They're working on the business. Oh. And they're present and they're here and they can take a part of whatever. They're not required to be here. The boss is going to fire them if they don't come to the keynote session. But they wanted to be there. And my job is to entertain and educate them and inspire them and hopefully challenge them to think differently. But you never know what someone's going through. So I think you need to be better than Facebook and Instagram. That's just the bottom line. And you need to be more interesting and you need to have a fun work culture. And you need to be able to have a, let them let their hair down, take them out, go out, make it fun for them, gamify it, make everything a game, right? That's what great sales organizations do is they gamify everything. So they say, hey, if you do this, you do this, you win this. And people want to win. They want to win. Whatever it is. So if you're not gamifying it, making it fun so they can incentivize them, they're not going to stick around.
Is it a generational thing for gamifying?
100%.
Yeah, is it?
But you see, like, I'll tell you what, I'm on flights every day. Lots of old dudes and gals gaming on their phones. They're playing video games, everything. That little rush of dopamine, right? Whatever it is. But I see people gambling, sports gambling. They're playing roulette 21. People just, they want to be entertained. It's a different way we entertain ourselves.
Do we talk to each other anymore?
Well, that's what these conferences are for, right? I mean, that's what's so good about a con. And that's, you know, during COVID, I lost my humanity, right? Like March 21, 2020, I was, my first client canceled and then every client canceled. And I didn't know if I'd ever work again. And we started being on Zoom. And first people were like, oh, this is great. I'll never have to go to work again. And then 6 months in, we're like, Zoom sucks. Like, I want to be with people.
Yeah.
And I remember being that first conference where we were together and we were social distancing. We had masks on. We had wristbands. Remember, red means don't come near me. Yellow means I'm okay. Blue, you can hug me.
I remember.
And it was these new rules and the PPP and all these things. But I remember that's when it made me think, like, that's what's so cool about this. When you come to a conference, it's not about the conference. It's about having a steak and a beer and a glass of wine and shaking hands and making new friends and connecting on LinkedIn. And hey, man, I can't wait to see you next year. And hey, we should do a mastermind. We should talk. Like, we should go offline and we could share leads. And hey, I got a guy. He's got a special vehicle. Maybe you'd be great for this. Or can I borrow one of your pieces of equipment or whatever? Like, that's what this is about.
Yeah.
It's collaboration. It's coming together, right? You can't do that on Zoom.
Completely agree. I think you summed up what's important in today's world, that we're not going to learn this sitting on our ass. We're not going to learn this scrolling mindlessly on our phones. And we're not going to learn anything about being better, getting out of our struggle. And I'm sorry to my listener, because you hear me talk about struggle a lot. Today, we talked a little bit with some of our interviews here. The survivorship is the connection that I've made actually in the last interview that I did, that if you're struggling and you don't care to survive, then continue to struggle. I have nothing more to do, say, or help you with. But if you do want to survive, what we do on our podcast has a lot of the answers, and or coming to events like this here, the summit at 2025 from the Institute. So thank you for bringing that up and forcing that into my listener's mind. You talked about being humble, and I think for the most part, many in our industry are, because we got where we got, not by being, I think, boisterous and big and loud. We just came back because we took care of people. They came in because they loved us, but now I've got to run a sustainable, profitable business. And I think to a point we can be humble, but I think we also have to embrace that we've got to make really tough decisions. If I'm a super humble person, can I really empower my people?
100%. You know, I just met Cecil, who started this whole thing. And
yeah,
you're not going to meet a more humble dude than Cecil.
I know.
Mean, he's just salt of the earth as it gets, right? And that's the thing. I sort of celebrate athletes who just, they've acted like they've been there before, right? They don't spike the ball. They don't dance. They don't.
Yeah, you told the Walter Payton story.
Yeah.
That's where this whole humble thing came from.
And, you know, we like doing business with people like that. I mean, look, there's other people. I mean, look, we're in an era of Trumpism where that's the anti-humble, right? I mean, and you look at Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali wasn't humble. He was one of the most cocky athletes. He had swagger, you know, chutzpah, charisma, call it what you want. But tell you what, there's lots of different ways to do business. And Ali used to say he'd won half his matches well before he ever stepped into the ring. When you're that confident, and you know what? If I'm going up against some guy for a big piece of corporate business, and now the way to be humble is people just know, like, man, those guys, they have the best service. They got the best waiting room. They take care of you. They just shower you with, they take little videos and call you, and they don't nickel and dime you. And they're not going to try and, you know, screw your insurance company for extra money or whatever. They just, they're going to take care of you. And like, that's the new cocky, right? That's the new way of being like, you just kill them with kindness and service. And that's the new thing now.
I've talked to the industry about hiring a CXO for their small business, and they look at me like I'm really strange. The client experience officer. Our businesses are too small to even think of doing it. But the answer is we all have to be the CXO.
Well, I think you can do it now with social. So cool. So I talk a lot about philanthropy. I've got a charitable foundation and I'm involved with a lot of charities. One of my favorite companies is a company called Starkey. They're a $6 billion medical device company. They make hearing aids, but they're not really known for their hearing aids. They're known for their philanthropy. They have their founders, Bill and Tawny Austin, their passion is to watch little kids hear for the first time. Mm-hmm. So they have these mission trips and they get rock stars, politicians, professional athletes to go to Haiti, Ghana, Liberia. They fit and they give kids hearing aids. But the secret of their success is they hire a bunch of young people like your amazing daughter who understand technology and social, and they get little video snippets and they put them to great music and they put them on TikTok and Snapchat and Instagram and YouTube, and they go viral. And it's these little kids hearing it and they go viral. And then every year they've got a gala. We get to go. They raise at least $10 million every year. It's a Hollywood A-list event. They fly in because they just love this company. I get to speak at their expo every other year. I'm a mini keynote in between President Bush and President Clinton.
Got it.
Talk about bipartisanship.
Okay.
But this company in a completely commoditized industry of hearing aids has completely differentiated themselves and quite frankly kicked butt to their philanthropy. They're not the low-cost leader. They're not the Walmart of hearing aids. In fact, they're the opposite. They're the most expensive. But people choose to do business with them because they give and they serve the communities that serve them, and they do it through their social. It doesn't cost a lot to create great video content. It's storytelling done in little snippets, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, right? I mean, so many of these of your listeners are, you know, they're just beating the dead horse with Facebook, you know, whatever. But you got to think differently. And if you, a CXO, perfect. That's a person that's going to think differently about how they're going to create different experiences, getting video testimonials of those great stories. How do you coach a young person to say, hey, can I get a video testimonial? Would you tell the story? Because if the customer tells, like I worked for a very similar group like this in the HVAC space. These are coaches like the Institute where they coach mom and pop owners, plumbers, all these different things. And they do a very similar thing because it's a very similar industry as like your listeners. I told them about a story about video testimonials because I have 150 on my website that people watch. And that's what gets me booked for speaking because I'm in a very commoditized business of selling speeches. Yeah. So because they get proof from other CEOs, VPs of sales going on and on about how great my program was and how much they love my program.
Love Ross.
It's not me bragging about me. It's my best customers.
Yeah, yeah.
So I coached this guy on how he could coach his people. So sure enough, Minnesota story here, a guy, mom and pop guy, some big wig has a party going on at New Year's Eve at his house. And the heat goes out New Year's Eve at like, you know, 11 o'clock at night. Who are you going to call? He starts calling. No one's answering. Finally gets a guy after hours, 24 hours, calls me, says, I'll be right over. Midnight, shows up, fix it. You don't have a good heater in Minnesota midnight. You're going to die. This guy was so happy that this guy came over, and the guy said, hey, can I ask you for a little video testimony? He meant because the guy gamified it. He said, if you bring me a video, I'm going to paid Friday off, right? We're going to reward you, gamify. So this CEO says, I'm switching all my business. I own all these companies. We're switching all our business to, you know, Bob's Appliances, whatever it was, because these guys were incredible. They came over. No one else took my call. These guys, he came over. He saved the day. He was so nice. Didn't nickel and dime me. And it went viral. They got so much business from this guy telling this, but it's because he asked for that. And he didn't want it. Go back to your office, record it just in the moment with the iPhone, authentic, bad audio. That's much, much better, more real. And that's the kind of stuff people need. And that's what the CXO does. You get a kid who understands technology and how do you capture the hearts and minds of the customers, because people have choices. They want to work with them. And then the CXO is going to tell people like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be commenting on Trump and Elon or Hillary and Kamala or abortion or gun laws, because maybe half your customers disagree with you. So don't do that.
Warning, that was one of the best pieces of advice we've had in a long time. Be careful.
Yeah. And just don't do it. Right. I'm Switzerland. Half my clients watch Fox News. The other half watch MSNBC. Yeah. It would not be prudent or smart for me to comment on anything political in my life. So I don't.
Yeah. That's smart. Yeah. I'm neutral too. When it comes to all the great people in our industry, I'm moved by, first of all, your great speech, but in a very short time together. And I want to leave, Ross, with your piece on be willing to change. And we all can change and improve. But when you said lean in, that really grabbed me. Because I think we talk about stuff, we write things down, we have our purpose, we have our why, we have our goals, but we never, if you will, I call it being bold, italic, leaning into a decision or into a goal and saying, I am going to do it and I am going to get it done. Talk to us about leaning in.
It's inevitable. Change is here. I gave some examples in my world of certainly when COVID hit, going virtual, a lot of my colleagues, competitors went broke. I had one of my best years ever. I was doing 4 gigs a day. Right? Companies didn't have a budget. I said, no worries. Twofer, BOGO. I'll do this one for free. Bring me back next year, full fee, and I'll be in person.
And this is all online, right?
It was all online, but I came out of the pandemic as the busiest speaker on the planet because I didn't let those relationships die. I took care of them when they needed me, just like I learned from my grandpa in the furniture stores. Take care of people when they need you the most. Don't charge them. Help them. And they'll remember you. And I came out smoking, and a lot of people never got their traction back. It's a momentum business. You get it, you keep it, but you got to change. Right? I mean, I wrote 50 books. Guess what? Bookstores are dying, right? Bookstores are gone. And now we've got eBooks and Kindles and Nooks and Audibles. And so content's changing. So you got to change. You got to adapt. You got to do different things. I've had books are what I call currency. I give them away. They're what I call that first warm puppy wet kiss. If a new client wants to hire me, I don't send them a brochure. I send them a bunch of my sports books for their bathroom library. And it starts that conversation off in a really different perspective.
Cool. You just hit on something, and I wanted this to be the last piece, but I can't let it be it. Okay. Because you talked about pick up the phone and call somebody. It resonated with me. And you also said, what would Grandpa Joe do? Mm-hmm. All right. So you're thinking back to some legacy moments, the things that you've learned in your life, and we all have them, but we also have challenges of today that we're not quite sure what Grandpa Joe would do. And even if Grandpa Joe could even understand the situation that I'm in. So you pick up the phone and you learn to network. I think it's missing. We do have friends, maybe not to the widest degree that we need to have in our industry as far as an influential network. But boy, we need to pick up the phone.
Yeah. I'm old school that way. And I still call people. I check in, enjoy it. You know, I'd rather call someone when I'm out for a run or a walk than being a mastermind where I get to pay to talk to them. I would rather just, hey man, how you doing? How's your family? What's going on? Like, catch me up. Anything new and exciting? And I just check in on people. And, you know, I remember when my dad took over the furniture stores in Southern Minnesota and he bought a computer. And that was a big deal because we had file cabinets of all of our customers. And look, they would come in and pay it. They were on layaway, right? They'd make payments like every Monday or whatever, first of the month, people would walk into the store and they would sit down, they'd have a cup of coffee. And they would make a payment that was credit in those,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And my grandpa would always under promise and over deliver. He would make sure they left with a donut, or maybe we'd always get free carpet samples, those little squares. And that would always be like a new rug for the garage, right? So people would always say, can I have a carpet? Of course you can, right? They'd always leave with something, right? And when we got the computer, this grandpa's like, well, they're not going to come in anymore. Then what? And it's scary. But every industry, from the horse and buggy guys to now we've got hyperloops and autonomous vehicles and mass transit and trains and Uber. I mean, are people even going to have cars in the next 10, 20 years? I don't know. But it's all about leaning in and saying, hey, man, let's just enjoy this ride. And look, if you want out, get out. There's private equity. Let the young guys take in, right? I mean, just like in Shawshank, get busy living or get busy dying. Like, enjoy this, take care of people, have fun, or find something else to do. It's okay. That's what this conference is about, man. Figure out that next step. If you're not passionate about it, pass the reins. It's okay.
That list that you read off of like 150 different things. Did you write that last night or is that just kind of a standard piece?
I have no comment. I customize it for every group.
I bet you do because yeah. We heard, of course, so much that it had relevancy to us.
My client yesterday was Ameriprise Financial Services. So they have very different problems than you have, right?
Right.
In this world. So every client has different challenges.
Oh my God. We're sitting there and he's going and going and going. Then he flips this little piece of paper over and he does another 50 or 60. And everyone resonated with me.
Yeah. But the moral of that story was, what are the things you can control? So many things you can't, right?
Exactly.
Economy and politics. So then it just comes back to like picking up the phone and just being nice and taking care of your mental health, your physical health. I mean, it's not rocket science. Business has always been business forever. People choose to do business with people who they like, who they trust, who get it, right? And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. People can get their car fixed anywhere. why would they choose to get their car fixed or repaired with you? That's the secret. And that's what you do. You educate your listeners. You're a proponent, a cheerleader for the industry. You're helping them solve problems, creating new ideas, ways to think. And so I just feel really lucky I got to spend a day and be an expert in this world. But I love meeting guys like you and your daughter.
Yeah.
And
thanks.
You're all about helping.
Thanks for hanging out with us. This is great. Ross Bernstein, an author, former mascot.
That's true.
Oh my God.
Former rodent.
Former Godin rodent mascot. And you've got to hear that story someday. You have a book about it. Am I right?
Well, it's not about me. It's more about the history of my books aren't about, like I say, I'm not the hero of my story. I talk about other people, but that's a history of gopher hockey at the University of Minnesota as told to a large, smelly, furry rodent.
Thanks for being here, Matt.
Great. Great to meet you. Thank you, Carl.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.